Hello and welcome to Everyone's an Expert with me, Dr. Alex D. This time I'm speaking to musician, composer and producer Sam Vickery about his new album Fractals, which is out now on E2 Music. Please excuse a couple of audio issues on this recording that arose from a problem at my end. I still think it's really worth listening into the great conversation that we had about Sam's music. And if you think that you can hear the sound of a dog barking in the background, that's right, you can. His name is Winston. He has a lot to say, but unfortunately, he's just a background addition on this episode. Sam is a wonderful, wonderful musician who I also have the pleasure of being good friends with. You might have seen Sam playing with a variety of people, including the Cinematic Orchestra and a number of other notable people for whom he's played bass. But of late, he's been releasing some incredible music under his own name. I would also implore you to go and check out music that he's released in the past under the moniker Hun Rosa, which is equally beautiful and thought-provoking. I began by asking Sam how he would describe the music on the new album.
I suppose under the main umbrella, I suppose it's a kind of ambient kind of umbrella in a very broad way. But I suppose it's quite a kind of, I wanted it to be quite an experiential kind of music. Taking inspiration from that kind of the Brian Eno ambient world where things are just happening and sounds are going, but try to kind of compose in a way that is kind of transportative, so you kind of go somewhere else. And almost like a sitting, you're having listening to music, but it's like a little mini event rather than it just, you know, music track through track.
An active listener.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, initially I was kind of hearing it almost and been asking people about almost like music to visualize too, I suppose. I got quite into kind of the idea of, I don't have synesthesia myself, but I do see colour in music quite a lot. So maybe I do have it actually. Just kind of answered my own thing there. But I find that really fascinating, and just how certain sounds, certain frequencies can kind of transport you somewhere else, essentially.
Have you always sort of visualised music in that way, or have you found yourself getting more plugged into it the deeper you go?
I think getting more plugged into it, but I feel I must have just never recognized it per se. Yeah. Especially with like sounds and kind of scales and harmony, and definitely like the light and dark idea. I definitely get that for sure. And that was something that definitely inspired this. So I suppose I was trying to create like little mini worlds.
Yeah.
In which things were kind of coming and going, and that kind of led to the focus on the kind of binaural beat aspect, actually.
Yeah, so speak to me a little bit about that. I'm really intrigued by the way that, because we've got two tracks from a 5-track EP out in the world, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
So I'm really into this concept of, as I understand it, each of these 5 tracks are based on a particular frequency. It's a frequency deficit between two ears, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So the first track, the fractal flight track, is a gamma wave, actually. So in terms of the basic principle of it with the binaural beat is that you create two different tones that are going directly into each ear, and then the difference is then the waveform. So the second track, Mesmerism, is a delta wave. So that's actually at 2 hertz. I think it was 120 in the left ear and 122 hertz in the right ear. And then it kind of like a neural oscillation, essentially, which is like almost like a phantom image thing. It's actually a brain trick, because obviously you can't hear completely independently in each ear. So you're kind of, your head does the math, and then you start to hear the phasing frequency, essentially.
So you got to forgive me for potentially a stupid question. So the wave that you're talking about, is that a graphic representation of the image that's created as a result of the difference between the two frequencies?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, your brain is creating that.
That's what I mean.
Wave. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So, as opposed to when you maybe have analog synthesis, there's a wave that is demonstrably there.
Yes, exactly. It's not like a subtractive synth or like an FM where you are throwing two waves into each other. These are completely independent.
Yes,
But your brain is the mix and the oscillators, if you like, I suppose.
No, exactly.
In a weird way.
I'm playing the role of an uninformed listener by being uninformed myself, but I've never really put that together of the fact that, I don't know, the basic principles of synthesis accept the differences instead of putting that through the thing to get the output that you would get with a synth. It's like you're synthesizing that within a listener.
In terms of the creation of that, it's quite simple. I use Ableton as kind of the main workstation when I'm creating. But I just create sine wave, two channels, and then one channel is that is 120, the other channel is 122, and just blend them and make sure the volumes are correct. But obviously, because it's just sine waves, it's very, very kind of simple kind of way of working. But then by doing that, you then create an interesting kind of difference in terms of pitch then as well.
I guess that means from a compositional point of view, you're rooted with a drone, but it's not a drone in the sense of a note as we would think of it with equal temperament, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, actually, all of the music's written in 4/3/2 as well.
Okay.
So everything is in 4/3/2 hertz. Everything's tuned to 4/3/2 hertz. So a lot of the notes I would use as the pedal notes would be like an A, for example, 2 octaves lower than 4/3/2. That would be the starting point. And then the slight oscillation in terms of the phasing of the sound, I just kind of dealt with that in certain ways. I suppose by everything is tuned to 4/3/2, everything that's in the track. So Stuart's guitar was tuned down, and the Miguel tuned to 4/3/2 when he was playing the violin on the second track as well. But I suppose that's, and also if I was using any synth, that was quite tricky. If I was using a synthesizer to actually pitch it, you suppose with the fine tuning on like the Moog, I've got the sub fatty, I can just kind of finely tune that and then refer to like a tuner that's pitched at 4/3/2 in the software.
Yeah, sure.
But also it's like the wobbly pitch thing wasn't really, I was kind of fine with that.
I guess
I was like, this is
less,
cool.
Oh, no, absolutely. It's less.
Yeah.
And those frequencies you're talking about as well, it's kind of less perceived anyway, I guess. Although the 4/3/2 thing, sorry. For any listeners that aren't, a lot of this is going over my head as well. But for any listeners that aren't aware, orchestras, for instance, in Europe, when they tune to an A, that A is at 440 hertz. And that's kind of become relatively normalized in a lot of electronic instruments. Like if you buy a keyboard from the shop, that's kind of where that's rooted. But that's just sort of a convention that's developed in the last handful of decades. So is there any particular reason at 4/3/2, is that meant to kind of resonate with us differently?
Yeah, there is a principle called Schumann's resonance principle, which is that it's essentially the earth, the electromagnetic field of the earth is 7.87 hertz, so we don't feel that because it's infrasonic sound. But the idea that 4/3/2, I suppose, comes, if you're building a scale, it comes from that fundamental. So, but in the design, as in with this music, because I wanted it to be almost in used for like meditative purposes or experiential, or you know, being transported, I wanted it to kind of soothe and calm and treat the listener in that way. So I wanted to take it, I thought that would be a good, it's a lot of this is experimenting really, but I read a lot in lockdown, I was like, oh, this is interesting, and I, the jury's still out whether it is a thing or not, but I was going to like, well, yeah, I'm going to go for that anyway.
That it is, because having spent some time with the music in a couple of different settings, when you say experimental music, it doesn't have that sound. People might think of early 20th century experimental music. It certainly doesn't feel that way, even if you aren't listening in an active way. It's I think beautiful music.
Well, thanks.
Based on a more standard aesthetic
value. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so, and when you mentioned the people that you've got who've currently collaborated on the stuff, people like Stuart and Miguel Atwood Ferguson, Stuart McCallum, sorry, who are esteemed composers in their own, their contributions are really beautiful as well. I mean, I've got lots of questions compositionally as well.
Yeah.
And I guess since we're speaking about those two guys, how did that process of collaboration work? Well, I guess wrapped up in that is one of my bigger questions about the scale of these pieces of music. So they unfold over 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated with how you manage that structural perspective. Because you've got those, take for instance the most recent release, Mesmerism. Got a lot of various unfolding layers of ideas.
Yeah.
What sort of comes first in that compositional process?
The kind of the bed of the sound, essentially, really.
Do you create that development and then sort of hand that over as the stimulus?
Exactly, yeah. So with all of them, actually, it was more, the main focus was using the binaural beat and then figuring out like a rough kind of key to kind of work within. And then it was like an improvised bed of music, essentially. So I was kind of using Ableton, but using a lot of controllers, so using like an Ableton Push, a lot of found sound, a lot of natural recording, the binaural recording to get that kind of like the nature sound. And had all of these things that were kind of lots of different textural elements that could be actually performed and played, kind of set up. So I'd have the binaural beat playing and then it would be improvised, like bring something in here, bring something in there, affect this in different ways. Oh, now that's turned into something else, so let's roll with that for a bit. Right. So it was almost like performed, and then once that was created, there was like natural dynamic, and then that was given to Miguel Stewart and John Haycock and Anna Aaron Wood, and they kind of put on improvisation, essentially.
That makes a lot more sense. I mean, especially in terms of that sense of the fundamentals, probably the wrong word, because I'm crossing streams of terminology, but
yeah,
the sort of fundamental bed of sound,
yeah
you create. I guess that makes more sense, because I was trying to think about, you know, that most of the stuff that I've researched would be related to song, so it's a closed form, and the way you think about a kind of macro structure is very different and block based.
So
it's fascinating to listen to, but also think, how do you manage that from a compositional perspective? But if it's performative, I guess that makes a bit more sense, because it's an organic development.
Just exactly, yeah, yeah.
Something you said about the found sounds.
Yeah.
Are you finding those that are already, they've been recorded in such a way that works within that binaural printer as well, is that right?
Yeah, I record them myself.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
With these, they're really good, these called CS10s. They're basically little earphones that are also binaural mics on the outside.
Just explain for us what the difference between a binaural mic and a standard microphone would be.
So essentially you're gonna capture more of the stereo field. So you can get more behind the head, essentially, is the kind of feeling with the binaural thing, which is great for just for kind of natural recording, to kind of get a bigger sense of space, I suppose. That kind of came naturally, looking at that along with the binaural beat principle, although they're very different things. Do you know what I mean? Okay. they're
sharing the vocabulary, the terminology, but it's a different principle.
Yeah. Because it just means two ears, obviously, yes, binaural. Yeah. But then with the binaural mics, you're kind of creating a bigger stereo feel. So standard kind of stereo would not get around the back of your head, essentially. So this kind of creates that kind of idea, which is then, I suppose, the start of the exploration into the spatial elements anyway. Because that's the kind of the latter part of the composition, I suppose. That's as much a part of the composition as the actual music and the actual audio.
There's another thing I was thinking about with that sense of how you might visualize a piece like these when you're in the middle of creating it.
Yeah.
You know, and that sense of, maybe narrative's not exactly the right word, but certainly the way that you use the term dynamic, I guess, is more appropriate. But
the
way that this is developing, but not in the kind of more oblique sense of, chord changes or feel changes or whatever. It's something different and more experiential.
Song. Yeah, absolutely. It's like a big focus on texture, really.
Yeah,
I think was a lot of my approach, really, and also manipulation of audio as well. So there's a lot of, with Stuart and Miguel, that was a kind of process, I suppose, like making the bed, having the improvisations, and then the next step was then going back through, figuring some stuff out, and then resampling through like a modular system, resampling all of the actual human, you know, interaction with the audio, then using the software and the binaural beat principle as well to then change that. So I would sample guitar, for example, into my kind of modular synth setup, and then affect the function of, so I've got like a granular sampler where it chops up into tiny grain sizes, but then you can plug in LFOs that will work. So I plug in LFOs that are moving at 2 hertz, which is the delta wave, which you're, and then that then starts creating more sound out of the recorded sound.
Am I right in saying it's quite a painstaking process?
Yeah, it's pretty tough. Yeah, for sure.
You go to a pretty meditative state to be able to concentrate. Well, yeah, to concentrate on that.
Yeah,
not lose the thread, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, in terms of the performing of it, it's definitely has to be in the right kind of moment and have it kind of moving. But then, yeah, going back to it, I do kind of see it quite a lot as like a different part. It's such a different part of the process. I kind of recently, well, through doing this work, actually decided to be quite particular about how I break up how I work. So when I'm really creative, everything's there to go and I can start creating, but then have this kind of stage of editing, have this where it's a different brain space, you know, and thinking of it more in a kind of like, engineer, mix engineer type approach. So a bit more kind of rigid in it, I suppose. But I mean, in terms of seeing it, it's very tough because I also went between different softwares as well. So it was a case of I wrote everything in Ableton because my kind of modular system links up and everything made sense to do it there. But while it was in that space, it was still in stereo. And then I bounced everything out of this audio and then into Reaper, which then I started to affect the kind of spatial elements of it. So that by even doing that process, I've then committed to the audio
by
bouncing it.
It's like, there must be a point in the genesis of any of those pieces where you have to commit and leave it alone.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that was that kind of
the next stage, because it makes sense to me how you would get collaborative elements back and then choose how you're going to manipulate them and introduce them to the listener and let them unfold, but you need to have already committed to one part of the superstructure, I guess, before that's possible.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of those different like steps, I suppose, gave me a different focus, and then from there it kind of everything kind of made a little bit more sense, I suppose, in terms of seeing it as a whole. And actually almost like I do sometimes just diagram out, just like draw, scribble, in terms of like almost like graphic score notation, just for like dynamic or where things are moving, and then different ways I want to then move it in terms of the spatial elements of it, and thinking of that, which is another whole world, really. that was like another stage of composition, actually. Once everything was kind of there in audio form, then it was like, right, now I want to move it in the immersive audio way. It's like, that is just so many options.
It's a whole other level, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And because you can, yeah.
It's important that it's sort of the same person or people engaged in each part of that process, because one thing is linked to the other. It's not like you're kind of producing a track and sending it off to a mix engineer and because it's so intrinsically part of what your aims are. But
yeah, absolutely.
It must take quite an intellectual toll.
It was pretty full on, yeah, especially because each track is like that kind of length as well, so it was a lot of long sittings working on it. And also to get perspective was hard, because it's you're listening to a 20-minute track. So when you're working on it, so by the time you get to the end, you're like, was everything nicely balanced? Or and you go back to it, oh no, I've got to start again.
I hesitated to make that kind of one of the things that I was knocked out by, because so not exactly a relief, but it's interesting that that is part of it, because
definitely.
It's not like there aren't already worlds where pieces of music of that length exist, but your aim as a composer is different to some of them.
Yeah.
And I guess also with Ableton, etc. I don't know. It's different to maybe like early techno, which maybe unfolds at a similar rate.
Yeah.
Rate's not necessarily the right word, or you know, minimalism from the 70s and 80s, but that was always kind of limited by and informed by the technology, wasn't it? But
yeah, for sure. But that, I mean, that a lot of that stuff is an inspiration, I think. It's that kind of thing so gradually changing, you know, slowly unfolding. It was definitely, it's been quite a kind of learning experience, really, to figure that out, how that kind of happens. I mean, all of the tracks kind of start quite a similar way, because I just wanted the binaural beat just to be on its own at the start of every track. And that was a kind of the main thing. It's almost like settling in.
Yeah.
And then kind of going somewhere else, I suppose, and then things coming in, things coming out. Also that idea of like there's something that will only happen once, and then other thing, it will happen like 10 times, but every time it was something different would have happened with it, or it will be somewhere else, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know,
what's not, I mean, I guess I've only done a couple of listens of each of them, but tried to make sure I was kind of, you know, getting the full experience and getting the full track. But it certainly achieves that thing of, even if you were tempted to play the game of trying to analyze as you listen, the change of things is, I think, it unfolds subtly enough that A, you kind of can't.
And then
something else happens while you're, if you're getting intrigued by one little moment, another thing emerges in a different place. And
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, you sometimes, quite often, people use ambient music as a way of, well, and I guess how people use the music is up to them, right? But there's a lot of ambient music out there that is designed to just kind of almost be a deliberate nothingness.
Exactly, yeah, just the background,
Which has a place, right?
Yeah, for sure.
It's interesting to have something where it must have been really hard to get to that point where you had a feel for something that is engaging enough that you're not drawn away from it, but is still in that meditative space.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it's quite a fine balance, I think. Certain things, and the overall sound of it as well is quite, each of them do sound very, very different in terms of that, the overall sonic, I think. But it's the same kind of ideas, but thinking different texturally in each of them.
Yeah.
Depending, I mean, the thing I had with the mesmerism one is that, because it's like a delta wave, which is what we kind of create in REM sleep. So actually listening back to that in a constructive way is really hard. Because sometimes I would literally just put your eyes closed to try and focus, and then I'd probably fall asleep quite a lot, or at least completely zone out. And then I'm like, what was I listening for again? It was really hard to be critical in that sense, which has kind of made it really fun as well. Because
you've got to go back and experience that a few different times and try to take an amalgam of what.
But I suppose ultimately it's the kind of feeling that the listener might experience, or the kind of your kind of state, your altered state, or whether you how far you're going into your head, you know, the idea of consciousness and all that kind of thing. And even physical, I've had a few people that are using the mesmerism track in like yoga classes and that kind of thing. I'm just trying to kind of like think about that, and also in like meditations as well. Just a bit, you know, that kind of downtime. It definitely lends itself to that. And like a couple of the waveforms, the alpha wave particularly, is quite an interesting. I had some quite interesting experiences just listening to just the two tones on their own. And that kind of giving you actual physical experience, like goosebumps and.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Kind of feelings of kind of, I don't know. Yeah. Just out of it, but in it, but very aware of where you are, but definitely somewhere else.
And does
it's quite interesting.
To what extent does that change some of the decision making you might make about how to use some of the other elements? Is that at the front of your mind, or are you sort of led by that feeling or instinct?
Yeah, I think I definitely, the alpha wave track particularly is probably the most, it's the next one that's coming out, is the most kind of sparse, actually. But it's got a kind of sound to it because of that waveform that's just, it feels like it's red to me in terms of color, but it's got this kind of like, very kind of, it's a very still sound. There's a lot going on in it, but I had to be very subtle, I think, with what I was doing, just because I felt that it didn't need a lot at all. And I wanted to bring in Anna because I wanted to get Anna McCluckey because I wanted a vocal element, even though it's not a song, it's just the voice moving and
voice,
yeah. Exactly. And I think that was going to be super, super important. And I think that's probably the one that's most effective for me in terms of having a feeling of that sense of like an altered state or being somewhere else or being transported. It really has a particular sound that, which I suppose at the time wasn't fully thinking about. It just kind of happened naturally. But again, because it's improvised and you have a kind of like a toolkit of, you've got the sound world built, and then you're just kind of doing what feels natural in that moment.
Yeah, I mean, so you know, we talked before about that sort of bed that you create.
Mm.
Am I right in saying that a lot of that will be essentially one performance of that piece then?
Hearing,
and then you either stick or twist.
Yeah. Yeah, and I might go back and edit or add some you know, different effects processing and stuff like that. And but I kind of built the setup is like a sub fatty synthesizer and Ableton Push as a controller, and then a modular synth that all links together, so I can send bits from the synth into the module and then sample it and send it back into Ableton, so it's all kind of talking to each other, so it kind of you can create these spaces. To me, that was one of the hardest things, just figuring out that. Well, yeah, you know, it's chaotic.
Getting it set up in a way that it's then natural for you to do with whatever you want to do in the moment. And
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Right. But it's also that way of performing something like that is also like so different to playing the bass, because you're always playing. So it's like I was taking that thing of letting something happen and then just sit for a bit. But sometimes like 2 minutes, not do anything, and then think, that's what I need to do. This is what I need here. So it's like such an interesting kind of approach. Very, very different to anything else I've ever done, I think, for sure.
Many thanks to Sam for joining me for that great chat. Just a reminder, the album is called Fractals and is out now on E2 Music. Go and check it out. Until next time, that's it from me. Goodbye, everyone.